Hey everybody, thanks for hitting the download button on the Mania Mania podcast. Jue and I have had a really fun time reliving some of the best and worst moments from the WrestleMania's past, and we want to include you in the fun for upcoming episodes, so send us an email with your best and worst moments of any future WrestleMania that we haven't covered yet to mymaniamania@gmail.com, and we'll include your thoughts and your comments in our next podcast. So please keep hitting the download button, subscribe to iTunes, and enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mania Mania!
Welcome to Mania Mania 13. I am your host, Terry Nation of Domination Catlett. Here as always with the birthday boy, my tag team partner, Hillbilly Jue Holt.
Yeah.
And today we're going to review for you WrestleMania 13, probably my favorite WrestleMania of all time. In the last 12 months, we've seen Bret Hart leave the company after the big 60-minute match with Shawn Michaels and then come back more angry than ever.
Yep.
We've seen the rise of a young and up-and-comer Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
What's been happening in the WWF in the last 12 months, Jue?
So Bret Hart was gone, as you had mentioned, and then Stone Cold Steve Austin, he won the 1996 King of the Ring, which he cut an amazing promo, which gave rise to the Austin 316, and also because Stone Cold said so in the same promo, which is amazing. So good. And then he started calling out Bret Hart in his promos, like, over the course of the previous few months, he started calling him out and taunting him and be like, I want a match.
I
Bret Hart was inactive.
I know there have been a lot of promos in wrestling.
Yeah.
But would you put the like best promo ever? Or just the one that led to the most stuff?
Yeah, that like man. I would say the one promo that was the catalyst for so much.
Yeah.
This is up there. This is up there.
This is such a famous promo.
CM Punk's pipe bomb promo was really good. Those two led to so much. Mm-hmm. Like you can obviously throw in Dusty Rhodes' Hard Times or Jake the Snake before WrestleMania 5 or WrestleMania 6, the wallowing in the muck of avarice promo, which is, those are all great promos, but they didn't necessarily lead to anything.
Yeah.
Whereas this one started everything.
Yeah, I know it gets so subjective, like, but
I'm currently wearing an Austin 316 t-shirt.
Because of that one promo.
Yeah, because of that one promo. Oh, I'm, man. And like, I have a t-shirt 20 years later. Like,
so iconic.
It's, you know, it's so good. And,
anyway, sorry to interrupt. What else has been going on? I was thinking about that promo, and I was like, is there a more famous promo in all of wrestling history?
Like, but there's with good reason, because Austin became the biggest star in history, you know, in the shortest amount of time. Obviously, like Hogan, you can say Hogan was bigger, which I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't argue against that because he's huge.
Right.
But Austin was so popular for like, he was really only around for like 4 years at his height. He was only around for like 3 or 4 years, whereas Hogan headlined 9 WrestleManias.
Right. Just going from A to B in such a, like, the next day he was the biggest thing in wrestling. It was so weird. But yeah, so now they've got that feud built up for this I Quit match.
Yep.
And then what else do we have for this card? Like, what else are they trying to build up?
The Undertaker and Psycho Sid.
Yeah.
Psycho Sid was the WWF champion at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Four Corners elimination match at a previous In Your House, which had Bret Hart, Psycho Sid, and Steve Austin, it looked like. And Sid ended up winning, Bret Hart ended up winning that match, but then he lost to Sid the very next day due to interference. So then Undertaker became the number one contender because Bret Hart wanted to go after Stone Cold.
Well, I guess the classic. Yeah, so those are kind of the two big matches coming into this, the two big feuds that we're going to settle the score at WrestleMania 13. So let me set the stage for WrestleMania 13. It is March 23rd, 1997. We're at the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago, Illinois. 18,197 people are going crazy. This is probably The best crowd that I've seen at a WrestleMania so far.
Because yeah, we kind
of
crowd.
Yeah, we go. We start off with this video montage of WrestleMania past, and they're kind of showing, you know, some of the best moments of WrestleMania, and then kind of pointing out that that's not the way WrestleMania is going to be anymore because we're back and we're pissed. Yeah. I don't know why they're selling this anger angle, big time. But then we cut to the live visual of the crowd and. There's just 316 everywhere.
Austin 316 everything. All over the place.
Brett sucks 316. Yeah. Everybody sucks 316. Yeah. Your mama 316. It is 316 everything. And you're right. Like that promo just made it all happen. Yeah. It was pretty great. And we go right to our broadcast team of JR finally on the stick.
Yeah.
And then Jerry the King Lawler and Vince. Who I wish we just could have bumped him out a little bit because you're looking at probably the best duo.
Yeah.
And they just got to get Vince out of there. Yeah.
It was crazy because at the beginning when they were showing the crowd and all the signs, it was Vince talking. And it was like, is he not going to have a partner? And then they show the table and he's still the only one talking.
Yeah.
He's like, are you two shut your fucking mouths? I'm running this.
I'm still in charge. Damn it.
Yeah. And then eventually JR, like they both, I don't know if they looked a little nervous, like, like not to say anything. And then JR was like, yep, I'm excited, or whatever.
Slobber knocker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, why?
It was a bit awkward.
Yeah. But, you know, that's just Vince.
So they just kind of get us hyped and get the stage set and start talking about how great this WrestleMania is going to be. Mm-hmm. And we go right to match number one, which is between
the Godwins of Phineas I and Henry O with Hillbilly Jim versus the Headbangers, Mosh and Thrasher versus Doug Furnace and Philip LaFon versus the New Blackjacks of Barry Windham and Justin Hawk Bradshaw.
Now, this is a four-way tag team match.
Which is an elimination match as well?
It is an elimination match as well. And you can tag anybody.
Yes.
Which is an odd twist. Mm-hmm. And the winner of this match is the number one contender for the WWF Tag Team Championship. So there's a lot of stuff you got to deal with in this match. I hadn't seen the Headbangers in a while. Mm-hmm. And I remember liking them. Like, they're really athletic guys that do a lot of cool stuff. So I was kind of excited to see them back again.
Yeah.
They did this one thing as they were bringing down the new Blackjacks to the ring where they showed a still picture of the old Blackjacks.
Yep.
Then they cut to like a little interview segment with the new Blackjacks, and it was so weird to see JBL in this gimmick with the little mustaches. And it was different, but they're talking, hey, it's a new day of blackjacking.
Yeah. It's weird that they brought in Barry Windham a couple times, and they always try to give him a gimmick.
Yeah.
Just let him be Barry Windham.
Nope.
We
got to put a cowboy hat on him and some chaps.
Yeah. Like, obviously, like, just let him be a Texan or whatever he is. I think he's from Florida, but whatever. Just let him be a Southern guy. Let him go. Like, they brought him in as, like, the stalker, and he wore camouflage and, like, painted his face, and he would, like, creep halfway out of the entrance. Like, just let him be Barry Windham.
Anytime I see, like, a little side interview segment, I always think, oh, this is the guys they're going to put over because they're clearly trying to make something of these guys.
Yeah.
Fortunately, that wasn't the case here, but the Blackjacks hit the ring, and it's kind of like this, and this is what I don't like, just unleashed free-for-all that starts happening. There was a stipulation that you could tag anyone, and so they kind of tended to utilize that little gimmick early on in this match where they're just tagging teams at random.
Yeah.
We got one interesting thing where the Headbangers both got tagged in at the same time, so they had to, I guess, quote-unquote fight each other.
Yeah.
So they do a little, just a quick offensive move, and then they tag other people.
They just did like
out.
A mosh move.
Yeah, I mean.
And it was funny because because of the Headbangers, Jerry Lawler would talk about rock music quite a bit.
Yeah.
And he says, you don't know anything about rock music, McMahon. Your favorite rock group is Mount Rushmore. And then Vince just goes, ha ha ha.
He was giving him crap about not knowing who White Zombie was,
because
apparently that one of the headbangers had that on their shirts.
Yeah,
and he had the line, and I don't mean to take your bit, but I did write one down.
Yeah.
He said, "I bet you think Fleetwood Mac is a new hamburger at McDonald's," and I thought, "All right."
He also said something like, "Do you even know who White Zombie is?" And I think Vince goes, does he open? Do they open for Tony Bennett?
Right.
And I was like, that's actually kind of, I kind of enjoyed that.
I'd like you to notice that we're talking about what the commentators were saying as opposed to what was going on in the match, because what the commentators were saying was way more interesting than the match. There was a little like a moment where the, let's see, what was it? Was it JBL that interfered with the ref?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he got disqualified for hitting the ref, and then
the Blackjacks, and then Philip Lafon and Doug Furness were fighting outside.
Right.
And then JBL pushes the ref.
That's right.
And then
so he gets DQ'd for that, and then
Lafon and Furness technically got counted out.
They got counted out for that. So both those tag teams are gone.
Mm-hmm.
So really now it's just the Headbangers and
the Godwins,
mm-hmm. and so. You know, that action was pretty good. I mean, like I said, the Headbangers were super agile.
Yep.
There was a moment, a segment towards the end where I think it was Mosh did this kind of leap off the second rope over the top rope onto one of the Godwins that was on the ground, which was kind of cool. But then he kind of gets up and looks right into the camera and says, "You know we're going to get that title shot," which... is how it ended up anyway.
Yeah.
So don't give away the finish right before the finish.
Yeah. Right, Matt? Right, Mosh? What are you doing?
But the Headbangers end up winning this match in just under 11 minutes. So we've got the opening match out of the way. The crowd's pretty pumped up. They seem kind of into this one.
Yeah.
But I just didn't dig it. I was more interested in what Jerry was dishing out to Vince, which was...
I liked the match much better when it became just a regular... tag match when it was just 2-on-2.
So yeah,
when
I'm glad they got those other.
When there was four tags, it was just too much.
Too much stuff. But then we go right to a little video package promoting the In Your House pay per view. So we're already promoting the next pay per view, which is fine.
Yep.
And then we introduce the Honky Tonk Man.
Yep.
Who comes down to the ring, and he's actually going to head down to the announcer table to put on a headset. They had a little thing, a gimmick for this pay per view where we have guest announcers.
Mm-hmm.
We had already three, and so we apparently for each, you know, for different
for a few matches,
we need an extra person. But I guess because the Intercontinental Championship's coming up next, we need the Honky Tonk Man to kind of talk about the Intercontinental Championship
because he's the greatest Intercontinental Champion
self-proclaimed
of all time,
for sure. Yeah. But that takes us right to match number two, which is between
the Sultan with the Iron Sheik and Bob Backlund versus Rocky Maivia.
This is the debut of Rocky Maivia, or The Rock, at WrestleMania. And also the Sultan, which I didn't know, is...
Rikishi. Yeah.
I like the Rikishi bit better.
Yeah.
You know, still, I really like him. I like his work.
Yeah.
But one thing I noticed, like, you know, Rocky is not... super over.
Nope.
A lot of heat.
Yeah. Got a couple of Rocky Sucks chants.
Well, and they talk about that, about his career. Like, he started out not getting heat or just not getting over. Like, he always got a lot of heat from, you know, probably the dressing room and the crowd.
Yeah.
But if you listen to the commentary of that match, they're burying him.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've got a fan base that hears nothing but negative about, like, Jerry didn't say one even close to flattering thing. They're burying the guy in the Honky Tonk. There's venom coming out of their mouths about this dude and about his lineage and about the fact that he's a rookie and that he's got too much too soon. And when that's all that the fans hear, how are they supposed to how is he supposed to get over?
Yeah, there's a way to talk about him negatively, but I mean, like, give him heat on the mic but still put him over.
Yeah,
like Heenan did it all the time.
Yeah,
he didn't say a flattering thing about anybody. But he didn't bury them. He got them over. Like, you know, anytime Heenan was on the mic, he talked about the guy, but in a way that still works.
That's what really shocked me about this whole thing, because, you know, in all the documentaries that you see about The Rock, they talk about how he had such a hard time, and that the reason his character turned so sharply was because of this negative reaction.
Yeah.
When you see that's the reaction that they're pushing on the fans.
Like, yeah.
They weren't trying to make him a babyface.
Right.
It seemed to me, and this may be just an isolated incident, but they're trying to get him heat because they're just burying the guys.
Yeah.
So it was weird seeing his – I thought the work in the ring for this match was really good. Rikishi's fantastic.
Always, yeah.
And, he had a headbutt that just looked amazing off the top rope. And both these guys are really agile. The Rock's working punches are probably my favorite,
mm-hmm.
just because they're just so athletic and interesting. Like, yeah. he just put so much into them. What I thought was great about this match is that there were none of really kind of The Rock's showpieces yet. Like, he was yeah. still – he didn't have the people's elbow.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have, you know, even just that the Rock bottom yet.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't have, like, his arsenal of stuff that we're used to seeing him with.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of fun just watching a match that he had that yeah. didn't have all the little
– that he wasn't The Rock in yeah. yet. Yeah.
And so he was – because he was still kind of doing his dad's moves.
Yeah. Like, a lot of his – like, some of his showboating or flair yeah. was definitely Rocky Johnson.
The Rock ends up going over in this match, but it was kind of a 50-50 match, and I thought the Sultan did a great job, and there were a lot of really good spots in this match. My favorite being The Rock kind of was whipped into the ropes and came off and did kind of like a loop around the Sultan's neck and back, and then gave him DDT. A DDT. Yeah. That looks so cool.
Yeah, I love that move. I don't know what to call it, but I enjoy what you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's why I have to describe it so badly, because yeah. I don't know what to call it. All I know is at the end of it, DDT.
Yeah.
But the way he got into DDT formation was fantastic and awesome.
Yeah.
And then he followed that up with the splash off the top rope, and I thought that was a really good segment. But this match starts to ramp up towards the end, and the Sheik interferes because The Rock's dominating the action at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So the Sheik starts to interfere so that the Sultan can kind of get the upper hand. He goes to work on The Rock, gets two pins, and then The Rock just kind of rolls up the Sultan for the win. So the ending was kind of weird, but, yeah. You know, it wasn't really the ending of the match wasn't as important as what happened after it,
because mm-hmm.
then there was like a free-for-all.
Yeah. As every match seemed to be in this card.
Yeah. I mean, that was just kind of the vibe of Chicago. Like,
yeah.
no rules. Mm-hmm. Let's just have wheels off yep. entertainment. But actually, The Rock's dad comes down to the ring
mm-hmm.
and starts to help him out.
Yeah. And, like, the Sheik actually puts on the camel clutch, which mm-hmm. is kind of – which it was kind of good to see.
It's a big deal. He yep. gets body slammed by The Rock.
Yeah.
So, like, really cool stuff after the match. Rock and his dad, you know, mm-hmm. which only buries him further.
Yeah.
Because Lawler is just so, you know, mad about it.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know how the guy had a chance, really. I don't know, that's just kind of my take from this match.
Yeah. It was interesting, and it was funny because his dad was there, and then The Rock actually, like, looks at him and goes, thank you. And it looked like a genuine thank you.
Right.
Like, I needed this. And yeah. it was like... you know, this is a work. Like, Rock was your dad was coming out,
right? Yeah, I loved how nobody knew that he was there.
Yeah,
because the announcers seemed, you know, they were playing like they were surprised that he was in the building. That's always my favorite. Like, oh my god, out of nowhere, the guy's dad's here.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Stu Hart seems to be in the front row of every pay-per-view anyway. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But we go to the back where Todd is in the dressing room and he's interviewing special guest referee for the I Quit match, Ken Shamrock.
Yep, world's most dangerous man.
The world's most dangerous man, and he's of course there to be the referee, and his interview skills are not fantastic.
Nope.
But they're basically kind of going over some video of the type of holds that he's been putting on people.
Yeah.
So we're setting up the fact that, hey, if any of these two guys get out of line
mm-hmm.
in this match, I'm just going to do a little toe hold on them and, yeah. and make them cry like a baby.
He'll take care of them.
But yeah, so we're getting our introduction to Ken Shamrock. And then we go to Doc Hendricks, who is interviewing Triple H,
mm-hmm.
Who still is not cutting a great promo at this point.
Yeah.
But he's introducing us to his new lady love, which is Chyna.
Yep.
And I forgot... the visual transformation that woman took over
yeah,
the years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep. Huge change.
Yeah, this is early stage Chyna,
mm-hmm.
which is early stage Chyna.
Not augmented.
No.
Pre-augmentation,
pre-face surgery, pre-everything. Yeah. And, like, there was just a lot of work done to that lady.
Yeah. Because she looks extremely different.
Very much so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't want to say any more unflattering things.
No.
But we go right to match number three, which is between
Hunter Hearst Helmsley with Chyna versus Goldust with Marlena.
And this match I was actually kind of excited for because I do like both these guys' work.
Mm-hmm.
Goldust is fantastic. And,
yep.
you know, for whatever anyone thinks of Triple H, he's always really good in the ring, I think. So they have kind of different styles, I guess. Yeah. So I was interested in how these guys would kind of work together. I thought they worked great together. This was a really good match. It was about a 15-minute match. It started out oddly because Goldust did that little squatting position.
Yeah.
Right before, like right as they're starting to face off before the bell.
Yeah.
And then he just explodes into a clothesline and goes into this little fast-paced spot where he just kind of dominates Triple H pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought these two worked really well together. They had a lot of really fast physical work.
Mm-hmm.
My only problem was like Vince was doing that thing where he declares the match over after every single move.
Yeah.
And that just started to get on my
nerves. He got him. Nope.
That's it. Yeah. It's over. Yeah. Triple H is going to win. Yeah. And, you know,
it
was
too much. He does it too often.
Fortunately, you know, it was so odd listening to, you know, you've got Jerry and JR there, and you just want Vince to go away.
Yeah, you do.
What did you think of this match?
Well, first off, I think Marlena is very possible taking the throne from Miss Elizabeth for me. I think she's just very, very attractive.
I want you to take that back because I have a note here that says Terry Reynolds is my least favorite manager valet of all time. I have it right here. That's so fine. This is okay. Let's have the fight.
Okay.
Match number four between Jway and Terry because she is terrible.
No, look, I think she's very attractive. She's got a nice body. Miss Elizabeth, way more. I think she's beautiful. Miss Elizabeth is beautiful and gorgeous, but I don't know. In this 90s, also, it could very well be that I was like 14 at the time.
Yeah.
So
Terry Reynolds has hobbit face, and I would rather have China. That's how bad she is for me. She's too augmented, and I don't like her, and I don't find her attractive. So we're going to stand on opposite sides of the fence.
Fine, let's do it. Fine.
Because I do not like her. She's awful, and that smoking the cigar is just not, like she's trying too hard to be a badass.
Mm.
I do not dig her. And I actually enjoyed the segment later on where like she's standing on the apron, right?
Yeah.
And help me describe this, because China stayed in one place the whole match.
Yes. And then China walks around the ring to get in Marlena's face because there's a whole – like China actually debuted by grabbing Marlena from outside the barricade and just shaking her like a rag doll.
So she goes over, which distracts, of course, Goldust, who then comes over to assist a little bit.
Yep.
So he starts to save Marlena by, I guess, pulling her up on the apron.
He picks her up and puts her on the apron.
And then Triple H comes from behind.
Knees him in the back,
which projectiles her into the arms of China.
Yes, who then shakes her like nobody's business.
That was violent.
Yeah, that was a legit, like, that was shaking violent. That was very, very violent.
Because Terry Reynolds is a tiny little lady.
Yes.
Like, she's maybe,
she's very small.
Like, 5'1", maybe.
Yeah.
Or just
with her heels.
Like, couldn't have even been 100 pounds. And she, and China's just... That was the most... This is a pay-per-view where we saw Stone Cold bleed out like a stuck pig.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that this was the most violent thing in the entire pay-per-view. It was pretty bad.
It was one of those where, like, I don't know how much she was acting. Like,
she wasn't.
You know?
She couldn't have been.
Yeah. Because
what Jway is referring to is at the end of this match, after it was over, first of all, Triple H gets the win.
Mm-hmm.
But she laid in the ring with Goldust kind of holding her for a long time, and she looked visibly shaken, like she'd just been through some serious trauma, and she had. And then he ends up actually picking her up and carrying her back to the back. But she could not have been acting at all. She that was probably a complete shoot.
It was super violent, very aggressive.
But to sum it all up, I enjoyed this match. I thought these two guys worked really good together. And
yeah, they had great chemistry.
I thought after what we've seen so far, this was probably my favorite match to this point.
Mm-hmm.
We cut right to the back, and we just cut to a shot of the Heartbreak Kid trying to work a computer.
Yeah.
For some reason, I guess they were doing this thing where they were trying to integrate. I guess online was happening.
Yeah,
this
is like America Online time.
I guess the internet was invented at this point. Because we see HBK doing a weird job of trying to work a computer and talk to fans.
And like Vince McMahon just had such a hard-on for Shawn Michaels at this time.
He
like,
did.
Like, ha-ha, look at Shawn Michaels.
he's so in love.
Yeah, and it was so over the top.
I hope those two get together.
Yeah.
He, Just the sound in his voice as he's talking about the Heartbreak Kid. My goodness.
It's so over the top. It was ridiculous.
But there's no interview segment here because we're going straight to match number four, who's between
Vader and Mankind with Paul Bearer versus the British Bulldog and Owen Hart.
And this is for the WWF Tag Team title.
Yes.
That is currently being held by Owen Hart and the British Bulldog.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really trying to – one of my notes from here is that they're really trying to sell Vader in this. Like, Vader's I don't know what your opinion is, but I never thought of him as a big deal. I guess maybe because he didn't have the look or the character. I don't know, but I never thought of him as like one of the top dudes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not the case, because obviously he is one of the top guys. I didn't realize he was 6'5" and all, like
he's a big guy
because everybody's so big, and he always face guys bigger than him generally.
Mm-hmm.
This was a match between four of probably the stiffest workers I've ever seen. And so if you're going to get close to a shoot fight, this was probably it because these guys were doing a lot of damage to one another.
Yeah, like I liked Vader. I think they used him, they booked him better in WCW as a top heel.
Okay.
It's different. It was different. Sorry. It was different in WWF because he faced different guys, bigger size guys, and they didn't book him as a heel, as that big of a heel. So he was selling differently also. And like his agility always changes the way that you view him. Like King Kong Bundy was a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
Vader could be just as big comparably as terms of body size, but you don't view them the same because Vader does moonsaults. Vader has no problem being a physical, agile guy, whereas Bundy was like, I'm not going off my feet. But that's also how his character. So I think that also plays into that.
Okay. Yeah, it's just the thing that I took from this match the most, just from the commentary, was that they're just trying to sell this guy as a monster the whole time, which, I mean, that influences how I watch a match.
Mm-hmm.
So and it was just curious, like, you know, we've got a lot of really good dudes in the ring here. Like, you see what Mankind would or Mick Foley would come to be.
Yeah.
And the type of worker that Owen, you know, I felt bad for Owen Hart in this match because I'm like, how can this guy make it look real? Like, there was a segment of this match where he and Vader were going at it. And Owen was just doing everything he could to even make it look like he was making a dent in this dude.
Yeah.
It was so hard. And Vader's having to sell, you know, these tiny little moves. There was a great move where Vader got, again, you talk about his athleticism, but he goes up to the top rope and he jumps off. Bulldog actually catches him and power slams him, which
that's
400 pounds coming off a top rope. That is so good.
Yeah. JR made mention that this was the Bulldog's 9th WrestleMania.
It doesn't seem like that.
Yeah. Well, because he was in some early ones.
Yeah,
and he
took
a couple break and then.
Yeah, that struck me odd because I don't remember him. He hasn't made that much of an impact on me in WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Because he hadn't had mostly he's been in tags.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, that kind of limits it for me. But
I was very glad to see Mankind here, just because Mick Foley understands his character work so well. Like his tormented soul or whatever character that he does for Mankind is great. When he like hits people in the face until like they're in the corner, hits them, and then they're like just sitting down, and then he just runs at them and knees them in the face is a great spot.
Yeah, and he was just starting to kind of get into the character and. You know, find it. I mean, you talk about how he had a really great command of it. He used it in this match, especially like after the ring when he had the mandible claw on, was it Bulldog at the end? Like he's just really selling that I'm crazy as hell. And, so that's kind of how this match ended. But, we've got the champions retaining their title and, moving on to the next part of their career. But I guess we've got Vader fully established as a monster, and Mick Foley establishes crazy and I'm willing to do anything. So as we would see that play out over their careers. So right after this match, there's a video promo for the Austin Hart match.
Yep.
And then Mr. Finkel announces Ken Shamrock down to the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes down there. And so now we're ready for a match number five, which is between
Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Bret the Hitman Hart.
And this is my favorite entrance because this is actually the one where the glass breaks.
Yeah.
And then Stone Cold comes out of the back. And Not as big a reaction as I thought it was going to be. Because I remember this is a big deal. So it was kind of weird to kind of see the subdued. I mean, there were, don't get me wrong, they were yelling, but it wasn't like you hear that glass and people just go nuts now.
Yeah. When Austin comes into the ring and stands on the second turnbuckle and just starts like shaking his head and just yelling at the crowd, it's one of my favorite spots.
Yeah.
He just looks so mad.
Yep. He's a full-on badass. There was a big pop for Hart when he came out. Like, a lot of boos, a lot of cheers. Like, you know, people are deciding their allegiances in this match, and that was due to the build-up. Like, I think this is one of the best built-up matches I've ever seen, because the people were engaged in this from the start, and they wanted to see a certain person win.
Yeah.
And then the psychology, they kind of took us on through this match. I wish they had done this with the 60-minute match.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and this is what I'm talking about, like, it seemed right from the start, like, we were just going to keep going.
Yeah.
And they found the things to keep extending the match that kept the audience interested. Like, this spilled out into the audience very quickly.
Very quickly.
And so you get a lot of time delay in just the movement back and forth, but the audience is engaged because you're in them.
Right.
And so, like, you know, we have the initial kind of classic Stone Cold brawling segment at the beginning.
Yep.
Then it spills out. Then we have like the body slam over the barricade into the WWE legends,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. Yep.
And then it just starts to spill out all over the arena.
Yeah.
A great spot where Stone Cold grabs a Coke from one of the vendors, takes a sip, and then smashes it over over Hart's head.
He said he'd do that anytime he had the chance. He'd take a sip and just...
Which was funny and great and everything. And my favorite, or I keep saying that, my favorite, but I thought it was awesome that Brett actually sold the cup, you know, you just got hit with water, but he's selling it like it's a working punch.
There was like a backdrop on the stairs, and I'm like, oh, this is like, there was a guy who just wanted to touch their heads.
Yeah.
He just kept touching their heads, and he got in a brown leather jacket, just touched their heads.
But, I mean, think about how much walking and movement they were doing without actually having to do moves and engage the crowd.
Right.
But you're building up this fever, this thing that's going on without all of the... I mean, this match was about 25 minutes, so half of the marathon match, right? Yeah. But there didn't seem to be all the dead spots that were in the Iron Man match.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so that's what I liked most about this match, is that they kept the intrigue going from the start and built it up to that fever pitch. I didn't think that they... Whereas we'd seen the I Quit match earlier where Piper was constantly trying to get him to say something, there was none of that interference by Shamrock. It was just these two dudes building this match.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just so much stuff he's trying to, you know, Brett's wrestling a little bit differently. And again, because they built this match so well, he gets to do a lot of heel moves.
Right. Well, this is also setting up the turn.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, because they've sold for the last, you know, however many months it was before that he's mad.
Yes.
He's not, you know, he can now do the heel offensive moves, like using the chair and going after the leg and being the shit heel that's, you know, trying to do a lot of, you know, dirty damage and stuff like that, which, you know, and we're slowly coming to Austin, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I've been talking so much. What were some? This was my favorite match. I just loved it.
No, of course, it was an amazing match. I love that, like, Shamrock was doing like a legitimate job of trying to keep the, when they were fighting in the crowd, he was pushing the crowd out.
He
was being a real ref. Like, they had security guys there, but he was still pushing everybody out. And I thought that was a great
move.
The chemistry of this of the two is off the charts.
Yeah,
they have such good chemistry. Like, I mean, I could say that with Bret Hart and almost anybody, because Bret Hart knows what he's doing, but you have to have somebody comparable to you in order to have that good chemistry.
Yep.
And Austin is amazing. He's one of the best of all time, obviously. But they had such good chemistry in there, and it's so great. Like, this match, Austin didn't have like a submission at this point in his career.
Right.
So Austin, like, why am I in a submission match?
Right.
Like, Bret Hart is a submission master.
Yeah, there was at one point he tried to put Bret in this kind of shoulder breaker. I mean, like, he had his head with the elbow and he was pulling the arm back, but it didn't even look
it was
super submission-y.
Yeah.
But to that point, Brett was selling the shit. He was selling it so much, and probably one of the reasons why this match was so great is because both these guys sold really well in doses necessary for not only their characters but the offense that just came at them.
Yeah.
So what if one of them wasn't just taking like a minor punch and then rolling around on the ground?
Yeah.
You know, when it got to a chair, it was a bigger sell. When when you know Austin started to sell the knee more and more and more.
Yeah, he was selling the knee like crazy.
Only but I mean, you know, think of all the things that Bret Hart was doing to it. Right. He would do, you know, that figure four over
on the post
on the post. First of all, it looked fantastic.
Yeah.
But just sitting there watching Stone Cold in agony.
Yeah.
Was great, and they built the moveset to inflict all this damage.
Yeah.
And they're both getting tired and beaten at the proper levels.
Yep.
And then you know when Stone Cold got whipped into the barricade and got I ran this back several times because you always catch when they blade.
Yeah.
I don't. So I ran it back several times. I still didn't see it.
You know why? Because Brett's the one who cut him.
No!
Yeah.
I've got to watch it again.
Yeah, Brett, at this point, there was a no-blood policy.
Mm-hmm.
And Bret Hart told Stone Cold, he's like, we need you to get color. And Austin said, like, Austin was like, well, he was still new in the company, so he didn't want to do it. So Brett's like, I'll do it for you. I'll take the heat. So Brett is the one who cut him. If you see him, grabs his head, he cuts him, and then he starts punching him in the head.
Greatness.
Yeah, it was so good, and
did you catch it all the and you did it again. Yeah. You're the blade master. How do you you?
Yeah,
because I ran it back five times. Going, I didn't see it. Like he went into the barricade. I at one point because they're over right by the crowd. I thought I saw him get one from a crowd member and do it, but I completely.
You were trying.
I was trying so hard.
All right, did you get it from Lawler?
I fantasized a little angel fairy flying down and. Damn it. You're so good. Yeah. Shit. But at that point, like he cuts him really well, and he's bleeding really badly.
Yeah.
And listen, I could go on and on about this match. This is my favorite match of all time. This was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
The way they built it up, the ending, phenomenal. Just the finish of him passing out.
Yeah.
The tussle with Shamrock from Bret Hart at the end.
Yeah.
The double turn.
Yeah.
They
did it so well.
The way they built it, this to me is the best thing that, and I may be irresponsible here, this is the best thing that WWF's ever done.
Yeah.
This was fantastic.
It was so well done. Like when he was selling, Hart was working on his leg for the entire match.
Mm-hmm.
Austin was selling it like crazy. When he puts him in the sharpshooter at first, and he's just like screaming, and the blood's pouring down his face, and he's screaming, he like arches up and powers out of that sharpshooter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is amazing. Like, I knew what was happening, and I'm still like, he's getting out of it. And then he goes right back into the sharpshooter, and I'm like, perfect. Like, they knew exactly what they had to do. Because if he just passed out from that first sharpshooter, I don't think obviously, it still would have been great. But I think it would have been like a 99.
That extra touch.
It would have been like a 99 out of 100.
Right.
And then he goes right back into it, and like, there it is. And then he passes out.
This art form, when it's at its best, makes you forget that it's an art form.
Yeah.
This did that for me.
Mm-hmm.
This is my favorite match of all time, hands down.
Yeah.
So, yes, I like this one.
I don't think it's my favorite match of all time.
You're wrong. I don't care if it's your birthday. Fuck you. Get out.
At the moment, I think it's WrestleMania 25. We'll get there. We'll get there in 12 weeks.
Yeah.
But this is easily top five, top three.
So, yeah. I could have just turned it off after this. That's cool. But unfortunately, I have to go on in this one. And after this match, another great moment, they let him, Austin doesn't want help to the, like, just every little detail in this match helped build both these characters.
Yeah.
Bret Hart's now an asshole. Stone Cold's now the biggest baby face in the company. So we go to the back, and Todd is interviewing the Nation of Domination.
Which is 15 people.
I don't even want to name them all.
Don't worry, I will.
Good, because name them all right now and describe match number 6 between...
The Nation of Domination of Farouk, Crush and Savio Vega with Wolfie D, JC Ice, D'Lo Brown, and Clarence Mason versus the Legion of Doom of Hawk and Animal and Ahmed Johnson.
All I heard was Legion of Doom. That's all I care about.
What a rush.
This is an 11-minute Chicago street fight. Mm-hmm. And LOD.
It's a Pier 6 brawl.
Yeah, this is going to get crazy. Mm-hmm. LOD got a huge pop, of course, coming out to the ring. And this is a hardcore match with no pacing at all.
Yeah.
This match was difficult to watch because there's so much happening at one time. Like, yes. There's this, and then this, and then that leads to this, and then boom!
Yeah.
It's the whole kitchen sink, literally. They had a kitchen sink in there.
No, they made sure to mention that a thousand times. Yeah.
And it is going nonstop from the bell, and it's three sets of people just kicking the shit out of each other with whatever they could find for 11 minutes. And, and so it was hard to watch because the way they did the production, it's this, then that, you know, the quick cuts, but it's just simultaneous action. There was just kind of no build for me. What did you think of this?
Even the guys on the outside for the Nation, the White Rappers and then D'Lo Brown, they were just immediately fighting. Like,
right.
No, you let the guys start the match. And then when it starts to spill outside, then you get involved. But you got to build it up, like you're saying. You have to ramp up that all of this excitement and this energy and everything. And they just started at out at like a 9, and you have to start out at like a 2, and then ramp up to a 9. You know?
Yeah, there was a moment because Animal had Farouk on the French or Spanish or German or
this one was French
Antiguan announce table.
Yeah, there it is,
and he's starting to. To try and pile drive him.
Yep.
And I didn't know if he was if Farouk was just trying to block it or he just didn't want him to do the move.
Mm-hmm.
But it started to look hesitant at one point. And then I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell if it was a botch or what.
Mm-hmm.
But he ended up pile driving him and they just went right to the floor. Yeah. Like
like they kind of fell over.
Yeah.
I consider it a botch.
Well, that's what I couldn't tell if they just didn't want to do it. I don't know. It looked really weird.
Yeah, it's strange because then they ended up using that table later on, so maybe they weren't supposed to.
Yeah,
at that particular time.
Yeah, because Farouk got body slammed.
Yeah, Ahmed Johnson throws him through the table. But yeah, it did look
so
weird.
So maybe he was going not yet.
Because Animal did pull him up, and then he was like holding him there for way too long.
Yeah,
and then they
pulled the move.
Yeah, and then he kind of just like half hopped and then like jumped off the side.
Yeah,
it was very strange.
There was a segment in this match where they brought out a noose.
Oh yeah, I didn't like that.
And after the OJ bit from WrestleMania 12,
I
thought this was in really bad taste.
Yeah,
it didn't look right. It wasn't executed right, and I didn't think it was necessary. They
not
had
at
so
all.
Many other toys.
Yeah. And this was in a no blood policy at the time. Mm-hmm. No blood. You can noose people all you want.
Yeah.
You know,
let's have a good old fashioned country hanging.
Yeah,
but just don't be bloody.
Right.
It didn't look right. It didn't feel. It felt wrong to me. My initial thought was no.
Mm-hmm.
No. You can't do that.
Yeah. I remember not liking it when I was little.
I didn't. There wasn't a psychology to this match. There wasn't anything that interested me after the fourth trash can hit.
Yeah.
It ended up with, you know, what LOD and Ahmed Johnson end up winning.
Mm-hmm.
A big deal. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, the crowd seemed to like it. They were into it. Mm-hmm. I guess to me, this was something that was great for if you were in the crowd.
Yeah.
This probably was a great live event thing.
Mm-hmm.
But for as far as TV being separated from it and just how it was covered, it left me a little cold.
Yeah. Also, there was one point when Hawk gets the noose put on him. It was backwards. And I remember when I was like 12 and I was watching him like, that noose is backwards. What are you doing? And like, I don't even think I knew what a noose was, but
right.
I was like, that doesn't look right. He does eventually fix it, but it was on backwards.
And of course, the bell doesn't stop anything here. They keep going far after the bell. My favorite move of this match was Animal gets up, or Hawk gets up on the top rope, and they give him... basically, Animal gets a guy up on his shoulders and
the Doomsday Device. Yeah.
Yep, and he does a double Doomsday Device. That looked pretty cool.
Yeah, the White Rappers, DJ Ice or JC Ice and Wolfie D.
Yeah. Okay. but that was my only kind of interest in this match or cool spot. Everything else was just a mess for me.
Works for me.
Any other thoughts on this match, sir?
Nope.
Let's move on because we're going right to our main event. HBK comes down to the ring because we need, of course, another guest announcer. Yeah.
And he takes a Hulk Hogan amount of time.
He does. He milked the crap out of this.
He really did.
But between him and the Undertaker's intro, that was about 30 minutes right there. Yeah. But I guess Shawn Michaels has a knee injury at this point. And so he's introduced. He's going to be the guest commentator. And you're right. He does a full lap around the ring.
Yep.
I thought that was it was odd that they had his full pyro set up for him,
right?
To do his natural "I'm going to wrestle" entrance,
yeah.
And then he seemed to blow it off a little bit.
Yeah,
I don't know. It just seemed odd.
And Vince was still talking about him.
He had the hard eyes.
It was
for
ridiculous.
Him, so much, but and then we go back to the back, and Todd is interviewing Psycho Sid.
Yeah,
who he's not scared.
He's not scared.
Everyone in the world is scared of The Undertaker, except for Sid, who is not scared of The Undertaker or vocal volume control.
Yeah.
There were so many volumes.
Loves that.
Yelling, whispering. Yeah. Just so many different levels of volume for his voice.
Like, I am the master.
In the man. every other word had its own volume. Yeah. It was great. But we're done. We're ready for the main event. Let's go to match number 7 between
The Undertaker versus Psycho Sid.
This is for the WWF Championship of the Universe. Psycho Sid is your champion. He comes down to the ring. Taker gets a huge pop for his entrance.
Yeah.
Chicago loves The Undertaker. Sid is full over as a heel. I don't know what to think of Sid, but I thought he seemed to get title shots at weird times. But it's like when we need a really big bad, like they just lost Diesel, they just lost Razor Ramon, so I guess we need our big villain back.
Yeah, and it was strange because Bret Hart comes down to the ring immediately,
right?
Asks for a mic, calls out everybody, yells at Shawn Michaels, says that he's got a pussyfoot injury, he's like, stay out of this match, tells Undertaker, we're not friends anymore. And then just says, Sid, like, you're not a real champ.
Right.
And then Sid gives him a powerbomb.
Yep.
And then Sid gets a huge pop. And then he gets the mic and is like, get out of here. And then the crowd, like, goes crazy. I'm like, wait,
he just had heat.
Yeah. And now it's gone.
I wish they had, as I was watching this, I was hoping that someone in the back would have done this. And this is just my Monday morning armchair booker.
Yeah.
But that Bret Hart Stone Cold went over so well.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You didn't need. I thought maybe they probably thought that we needed some extra shit to get Hart more heat.
Yep.
But it was unnecessary. Mm-hmm. So let's just pull it.
Yeah.
Like they did not need that bit at all to get him over as a heel.
No.
He was fully over going into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. It was conflicting to watch Sid kind of be babyface and back to heel.
Yeah.
it was an unnecessary thing. Plus, it takes away from your main event.
Yep.
I just didn't dig that out. We got a lot of stuff distracting from what should be a main event in this one. We got HBK doing his commentary, and then we got this Bret Hart thing that I just thought got it off to the
wrong start. Also, when Bret calls out Shawn Michaels, like Vince McMahon gets up from his chair and like holds him. He's like, nope, nope, don't get up. And Shawn's like, I'm not getting up.
No, like, I'm cool.
Of course.
No, baby, don't worry.
Yeah, everybody knows that he's not going to get up because that's not a part of the match. Like, this should not be part of the program.
This is and everything that was happening kind of made the match kind of take a back seat.
Yeah.
But I mean, this was a pretty good match. You know, The Undertaker to me is in the prime of his career.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big man match.
Yep.
A pretty athletic big man match. But you know, they're gonna. It always impresses me when I watch these big guys throw each other around because these guys are 7 feet tall, you know, 300+ pounds, and they're just throwing each other around like ragdolls. That's always impressive to me. There was a moment where Sid actually got the tombstone on the Undertaker that looked pretty good.
Yeah,
got the two count. Bret Hart comes back out at some point.
Of course,
I wish they just would have pulled that segment all together because to me it just ruined.
Yeah,
it made him look. I don't know. I didn't dig it. I didn't think that it added to his.
It wasn't necessary to like he already the turn already happened. Like he was a heel. It was a success, and then this one is like. Well, also at the time they didn't necessarily know. In the midst of it, like, did it really work? I mean, they should have known because it was a solid response.
I don't know how you get to the back after that match and not know that, oh, that was just phenomenal.
And, like, that worked.
Yeah.
So then to come in just to solidify it
Yeah, to me, it's one of those things they plan out ahead of time, thinking, oh, you know, if that double turn doesn't go well, then we need this to kind of just lock in the heat. But I can't imagine either one of them leaving that ring at that point and not just knowing, oh, that was...
Yeah, that worked.
Yeah. So, again, just all this stuff that just kept drawing away from this match with, you know, two really good athletic dudes. I mean, Undertaker gets the tombstone for the 1-2-3. Mm-hmm. So we've got a brand new WWF champion.
Yeah.
The era of the Undertaker is now upon us.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks so odd holding a belt. It's just not part of his...
Yeah,
his gimmick. So I mean, I know he's the champion and he's a great champion, but he always looks weird holding a belt.
Now that you mention it, that is strange because like Undertaker is a character and just the wrestler that doesn't need that.
Yeah,
like some guys, they look better when they have titles and like they need to be a part of something big. The Undertaker himself carries enough weight that you don't need to have a championship for him.
Agreed. He looks
like so many times. In like the WrestleManias 20 through like 30, it was about the streak.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a championship in that match. You know, you just need the Undertaker, and that's plenty. You know, to give him a title, it makes sense because he's so good, and you want.
Yeah, no, he deserves a championship.
Yeah,
but he just he doesn't need the accoutrement, the belt. He just doesn't. He doesn't need it. He's the Undertaker.
Yeah, the Undertaker does not need anything else.
You know, how many guys actually transcend the sport, the art, we don't need a title, you know? You're the Undertaker. Yeah. You're not a boxer. You're not a wrestler. You're not a whatever. You're the Undertaker.
Like Hulk Hogan didn't necessarily need a championship, but you envision Hulk Hogan with a championship.
Yeah, because, that was his big thing. Yeah,
like he was always the champion. Like Austin... I don't necessarily view him as a champion, but he's has the championship for multiple times.
Yeah, I think the biggest people in the sport you never think of with a title.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know they've always had belts and all that stuff, but I never think of The Rock and just go, well, he's not that great without being the champ.
Yeah,
you know.
But it's also weird because then you have like Ric Flair, he's the 16-time world champion.
Right, but that's also. That was his gimmick.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, that's what got him over. Just the lifestyle, that mantra, that everything.
Yeah.
So I think that's different for him because that's what he played up the most.
That's very true.
So yeah, he needs that to. It'd be like the Undertaker without the Undertaker part.
Yeah.
It's like that's my bit.
I'm just Mark Calaway.
I'm just Mark, and I've got a headband on. So what's up?
Yeah. Hey guys.
So let's get to our awards for the night. What is your pop of the night, sir?
My pop of the night goes to Ken Shamrock after he suplexed Bret Hart.
That place blew up when that happened. They were at such a fever pitch at the end of that match.
They really were.
And it was a great ad, a great moment, fantastic. Mm-hmm. So yes, I think that is the biggest one. I'm a sucker for the LOD entrance, so I'm going to go with that. Ahmed Johnson quit ruining my LOD entrances. But my bump of the night, and there's a couple, but the way Austin flew into that barricade when they started that little blade segment was pretty intense. What about yourself?
My bump of the night goes to Marlena.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm giving it to her.
I think you win that one as well. That was so vicious.
That ragdoll, man.
Anyone listening to this, go watch that. Just even that segment. It's one of the first matches, and it'll take you 10 seconds. But it is legit. It what is your botch of the night, sir?
My botch of the night is Animal trying to pile drive Farouk on that French announce table.
That was pretty much mine as well. I just that's what stuck out the most to me because it looked very bizarre. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could hear the communication between those guys.
Yeah.
That looked pretty awful.
Mm-hmm.
My spot of the night was when, and I probably should just say the entire damn Bret Hart match and Stone Cold match, but I'm going to say when Bulldog caught Vader off the top rope and powerbombed him, I was thinking about just the inertia and the weight involved and the athleticism for both. I mean, obviously Vader had to help him.
Yes.
But it looked really cool. And just the even thought of, I'm 6'5". I want you to catch me off the top rope and powerbomb me. Right? And then Bulldog going, okay.
Yeah.
That's my spot of the night. What is yours, sir?
My spot of the night is Austin screaming with blood running down his face.
Yeah, that is
it's so good. It's so iconic.
Yep.
Like, that is one of the first things people think about when they think about Austin.
It was pretty incredible. Mm-hmm. What is your worst match of the night, sir?
My worst match of the night goes to the Sultan versus Rocky Maivia.
Why was that so terrible for you? It just didn't get over.
Just didn't get over with me. I, in my opinion, I think maybe it might be yours, but the Chicago Street Fight was technically worse.
That is mine.
Yeah.
Only because there was no real psychology involved, yeah, and it was just too much happening mm-hmm. at the same. Like, it was too much happening to cover with television.
Yeah. And I think the Sultan Rocky Maivia match was like, I know that what these two guys can put out,
right,
like the output that these two can have. Like, Rikishi put on WrestleMania 9 against the Steiners, like the Head Shrinkers versus the Steiners, was a fantastic match because, you know, like, Rikishi knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't, I don't know, him with this as the Sultan didn't work for me, and then Rocky was just, eh.
Two guys who didn't live up to their potential, probably.
Yeah, for that specific match.
Yeah, and for the street fight, there was no escalation of violence. Everything mm-hmm. was just, especially you're seeing the same moves in the first minute of the match you were seeing in the last 10 minutes. So
yeah, it's just too much.
I got desensitized to it, and I just thought, man, this is just too much to even take in. So
yeah, like the biggest pop in that match was when they did an actual wrestling move.
Yes, finally at the end. My best match of the night is, of course, Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, how could it be anything else in this?
I don't know. I didn't know if you had one.
No, of course not. It's Bret Hart versus Stone Cold. It was so good.
Because your girlfriend, Marlena, was in a match. You want to call that one your best match of the night?
You're right. Best match. Best match of the night. Marlena and that cigar.
Your pretty little girl got thrown around by a man girl. So now we get to it. Jouet, who is your MVP for WrestleMania 13?
I got co-MVPs, Bret Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Giving it to the both of them.
I've got Stone Cold written down here, but I like your answer much better because I don't know how I can single out one of those two without the other. They fed off each other so well, and they planned out and escalated the perfect match.
Yeah.
It
was so good. I had thought about trying to give Bret Hart and Stone Cold every award, but then I was like, well, I can't. There was nothing bad about this match.
I did not find a spot in that match where I just went, I wish they'd done this a little bit better.
Yeah. Like, Stone Cold Steve Austin on his podcast, like, did commentary about this match.
Yeah.
And he said, like, the one thing that he didn't like about the match is when he got suplexed onto the barricade, or he suplexed Bret Hart onto the barricade.
Yeah.
The only thing that he didn't like about it is that one of the attendants got in his way, so he hit his leg, and that's it. Because the guy was trying to keep people away from the match, so then he just got too close to the barricade. That was the one thing that Stone Cold didn't like about the match.
Does Stone Cold label this as his best match?
I don't remember what he said, but it's definitely up there.
I don't see how and maybe we'll find one along the way, but I can't imagine. I can't imagine he looks through his career, at least a televised one, and says that there's one better than just with the build up, the execution, the finish, the outcome. It was perfect.
It was perfect. It was amazing.
Happy birthday, Jouet.
Thank you, Terry.
And so that's all we have for Mania 13. WrestleMania 13 is in the books, and well done to the WWE Universe for that one. And next week we're going to go on to review WrestleMania 14, which has the great match between Stone Cold and the Heartbreak Kid.
Mm-hmm.
Stone Cold takes the mantle. He's going to be the new champ. We got Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Iron Mike. I'm looking forward to this one, but that's all we have for this. So until then, I am Terry, Nation of Domination Catlett, here with Hillbilly Jouet Holt, and we will see you next time.
Bye.